Welcome to the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Joe Masato, joined by Barry Trammell, here to recap the Thunder's 134-116 loss to the Charlotte Hornets on Monday night at Paycom Center. Anytime you see the Hornets play, you know it's going to be fun if you like fast-paced basketball, because the Hornets, Barry, are very fast-paced. Mark Daigneault said before the game that they're a one-of-one to prepare for, in the same vein of the Nuggets and the Warriors. The only difference is Hornets still aren't a great team. They're average. They're a game under 500. But they play at one of the fastest paces in the league. They lead the NBA in scoring. And tonight, they weren't super fast-paced, but they still scored a ton. 134, they really got going from three. The Thunder got out to a fast start, 41 points, a season-high 41 points in the first quarter. But the Hornets ended up pulling away. But all in all, there were some intriguing things tonight. What are some of the things that stood out to you, Barry?
Oh, a few things. One is the Thunder's defense was abysmal again. Now, as you said, Charlotte's one of the better offensive teams in the NBA. But the Charlotte had four guys who combined to make 18 of 26 from three-point range.
On great efficiency.
So just incredible shooting by Charlotte. Another big game for Darius Bazley. Back-to-back high efficiency, high production games. SGA was his usual post all-star self. And then the other thing was a come to earth for Lindy Waters, who goes 0 of 6 from 3. After a big night last night, but that's just going to happen. So, Thunder is up 18 early in the second quarter, and at the 5:50 mark, they'd cut it to 5. They took the lead by the end of the quarter. So, Thunder had a sort of a high ride there for a while, but then things sort of collapsed on them pretty good.
Yeah, Charlotte, just with the way they score, can just go on some huge runs. They're an interesting team because Miles Bridges, LaMelo Ball, Terry Rozier all average 19-point-something points per game. Gordon Hayward, who's out with an injury, he averages 16 points a game. So they just have a lot of guys who can score. Heck, how about Isaiah Thomas coming off the bench for the Hornets, going 4 of 4 from three tonight, all in one.
All in the second quarter.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, it was. He's of course he's sort of a volatile player. How long has it been since he was that year? He was mentioned as an MVP with the Celtics. 15 or 16, somewhere in there.
Yeah, that sounds right.
But he, at one point, he was guarded by Poku, and he stood about he about reached Poku, top of his head reached Poku's rib cage. So that was a very interesting sight, I thought, to behold. Yeah. But no, you know what? I like some of these teams we don't see very often, and Charlotte is an entertaining team, and with Hayward. You know, when Hayward was healthy, they were actually much better than they are in terms of competitive in the East. They were 6th or 7th in the East most of the season.
Yeah.
I think they're down to 10th now, I think. So,
yeah.
They're going to make the playoffs, I think, but it's going to be uphill to – they're going to make the play-in, but it's going to be uphill to make the playoffs. So, it's not a team, a franchise that has done much playoffing. I think twice in the last 11 years they've made the playoffs. So
it's also
it's
also a team, Barry, that like LaMelo Ball building block. If he takes one more step into superstardom, I really like their future. Miles Bridges, a really good player, sometimes gets overshadowed by the other Bridges, no relation in Phoenix. PJ Washington's a good player, but then you have Rozier there, you have Gordon Hayward, who you've got a ton of money tied up in him over the next few years. I'm just curious to see how this team builds going toward the future, because the knock against Charlotte in the last several years has been they always try to build to be sort of a back-end playoff team and really not a lot of foresight into what the next few years are going to look like. So I'm sort of intrigued by them.
Yeah, you don't see a they're sort of a good test case for Sam Presti's rebuilding model. You don't see an avenue for greatness for Charlotte, even if Ball takes that next step you're talking about. I mean, Charlotte, how can Charlotte become one of the five best teams in the East?
Yeah, especially with the East now.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it's possible. It's going to be hard to get free agents there, even if they had the money. They're going to have to draft, you know, their stars. They certainly drafted Ball. Bridges came out of the draft. Rozier came in basically the sign and trade for Kemba Walker. But, you know, they're going to be drafting, what, 15, 16?
Yeah, that's 12, that's, 13. That's problem. They brought in some of these veterans, and now they rushed a little bit to the middle, and now they're sort of stuck. They still need another piece. One note about Charlotte, just a behind the scenes type thing. They've got the loudest all around production in the NBA. Eric Collins, their TV play by play man, alongside Del Curry. Collins is, if you haven't heard him, just look up Charlotte Hornets highlights. Listen to him. He goes absolutely crazy. It's entertaining. He almost fell out of his chair three times tonight. I was just cracking up sitting right behind him. And I say all-around production because it's not just him. They have the loudest bench in the NBA, not the players, but the assistant coaches. They've got two assistant coaches who are just screaming their heads off all game. James Borrego doesn't make a ton of noise, but, man, his assistants are just going nuts. And mostly on the defensive end, and I think they should try just, you know, being quiet a little bit because Charlotte's a terrible defensive team. So I don't think it's doing anything. So maybe just try not to yell as much. But anyway, let's get back to the Thunder side of things. You mentioned Baisley. His two highest scoring games of the season all came in the last 24 so hours in this back-to-back. He had 29 last night against the Grizzlies. He had 25 tonight against the Hornets, was 4 of 9 from 3, 10 of 18. Barry, the beginning of the season, nothing was working. Now he's developed into a really good defensive player. Now these last couple of games, his offense has come around. Are you buying into this offensive version of Baisley, or do you think it's more of a product of they have 8 guys out, someone's got to score?
I am buying in. Well, the offensive version of Baisley, more than somebody's got to score. He is playing better. His three-point percentage, I don't know, he's 4 of 9 tonight. Does that get him above 30%? I'd have to look at it. I don't remember if it does. Let's see. He's now 70 of 235. So that I don't think that gets him above 30%. But he's knocking on the door of 30%. He's a guy who I think if he will stop taking so many threes, I like his offense a lot better. But I like that defense, man. You know, he started out, or I don't know if he started out, but he played with the assignment of Ball early in the game.
And
you know, Ball was terrible in the first half, really out of sorts. Now he got cranking on the three in the second half, but I'm bullish on the Baisley defense, the rim protection, and a guy who can guard out on the perimeter. That's a quality ball player.
It's not just the rim protection. When you talk about rim protection, it's in the traditional sense of like a big center down there, like a Rudy Gobert swallowing everything up. But you know, Baisley. You know, can block shots at the rim, but the way you just don't see guys block jump shots all that often in the NBA, and he started to regularly do that, and that's impressive just given that he can do that on the perimeter. We also talk a lot about oh, this guy can guard one through five. Well, usually not. And I'm not saying Bazley can always do it effectively, but the way Dignault uses him, he literally does guard one through five over the course of a few games. Like he, like you mentioned, Ball, he was playing against Bridges, who's a big wing. He's guarded centers in the past. He was guarding Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell in the same game against the Jazz the other night. So he's extremely versatile on that end.
Yeah, so I think he's got value to a lot of people. Could be the Thunder, for all I know. I mean, but, you know, a guy that can do that, especially if he'll keep working on the shot. You know, we've talked about it. I don't like him as a facilitator, which we've sort of been, you know, was sort of the billing he had coming out of the internship. But I think he's going to be a solid NBA player for a while just because of that defensive versatility, and he's, you know, got some offensive chops from time to time. So, yeah, one of the questions, you know, we got so many questions, who's an NBA player, who's not on this team? I think Bazley has answered in the affirmative for the back half of this season.
Yeah, I feel like defend and dunk should be his motto because he, you know, he can score just on easy cuts to the rim. He had like four or five dunks tonight, so he can be effective in that way offensively. Okay, so let's play this game a little bit. Is he an NBA player? Because I fluctuate day to day with a lot of these Thunder players. Oleksiy Pokuševski, I would say he's an NBA player in the first half. Wasn't much of an NBA player in the second half. I actually thought the first half was some of the best basketball he's played. He was a facilitator, took good shots. Second half, maybe you don't want to read too much into it, but he airballed 3 3-pointers and just was totally off. I've been harder than most on Poku. I've been less hopeful than just about anybody, I feel like, on Poku. But, you know, we've just treated him with just such kid gloves at times. If he makes one simple pass or simple play, it's like, oh, did you see Poku do that? And, like, just the bar for him has been so low, but he really has turned it around these past few games. He's looking more like an NBA player. Is Poku an NBA player, Barry?
I need to still withhold judgment. I'm more confident than I was 2 months ago. I did see something tonight that was troubling. He fell down again. I hadn't seen that in a month or two, or maybe it's not that long. It's been quite a few games since I've seen him fall down. You know, last year he was falling down the whole dang game. I tend to think he might be. He seems more confident on his mid-range shots or his paint shots. He still does some dumb stuff. He had an 8-footer with Isaiah Thomas on him tonight, and he passed out to the wing. Isaiah Thomas is literally, what, 16 inches shorter than Poku? And Isaiah Thomas really doesn't jump except shoot. He doesn't want to exert any energy that can be used to produce points. So, you know, shoot on the guy. So he does some things that still drive me nuts. But, you know, he's not there yet. But I'm reasonably confident that he might be an NBA player.
Yeah. He has taken a pretty significant step, I think, from last year. Last year, it was just like the game was happening, and then Poku was out there doing his own thing, like doing crazy passes, all of this stuff. And it's like, how is this guy? Either he's going to be a superstar who just can do whatever he wants, or like there's no way he can fit into a team. This year, I think he's been, you know, more within the offense, taking less risks. That sort of takes some of the fun out of his game. But he's looked more like an NBA player. Now, it's still wildly inconsistent. But yeah, I'm starting to buy back in a little bit on Poku's long-term prospects as an NBA player. He is finishing better. He's getting to the rim better. I think he's using his length better than he has. You remember last year, he would just never get inside, never get into the paint. It was all jump shots, basically, and mid-rangers. But he's progressing on that end a little bit. Is Vit Krejci an NBA player?
You know, I have no idea, but I'm starting to like the guy. He does stuff when he's out there. I was watching tonight, and I don't know, and you'd have a better sense of this. What kind of a defender is he? Is he a good defender? Is he a work in progress? What's he doing defensively? I don't have a good sense of that, but I like his offense pretty well.
Yeah.
Pretty well.
Yeah, Daigneault said after the game that defense is where he's got to get a lot better. So I take that to mean pretty poor defender, but some of it also has to do with, you know, he's coming off an ACL, year-long ACL rehab. Then he had a horrible ankle sprain, and he's just – I haven't seen him play like fully healthy. I think that his knee is still bothering him a little bit. He's even said that. So he might just be moving a little slower because of that. And that certainly hurts him defensively. But tonight, he didn't have to move much offensively. I mean, he was just hitting spot up threes. And I sort of am still learning what kind of player he can be.
You know, he's 13 of 35 from deep this season. And that's not a bad player. A guy that can do that now.
He's big. He's like 6'8".
He is big. Yeah, he's a long, tall kid. So, a kid. I don't even know how old Vic Krejci is. Let's look. I got this right here. He's only 21 years old. So that's cool. Turns 22 in June. So he'll be this is his year 21 season. So he's doing a nice job. I think he's making the most of a opportunity that we didn't know it would ever come.
No.
And you know, he didn't play the first half of the season. So, you know, I don't know. He's one of those guys that might end up playing.
Yeah.
But I like what I've seen so far. Let's see. I don't even know. It's my impression is his turnover rate is not outrageous. So.
You know, he's a point guard in Spain.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, that's
now,
cool.
He's certainly not going to be a point guard here, but like he fits into the whole positionless thing, a 6'8 guy who can dribble, pass, and shoot the ball. So I don't know if he's going to be doing all those things. Maybe he'll turn into more of a specialist. But I think that's what intrigued him is he's a 6'8 guard.
6'8 guard, that's right. And if he keeps making shots like he made tonight, now I think he was 4-6, is that right?
Yeah.
I think from deep. So he's a little bit like Lindy Waters. If he keeps making shots, he'll keep getting put out there.
Yeah.
So I like what I've seen out of Krejci.
I think we know if this guy's an NBA player, but I suppose we should mention Shai because he had 32 tonight. 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 12 of 20. It's just sort of ho-hum. I mean, this is just what he's been since the All-Star break, since coming back from that injury. He's been an absolute star on the offensive end, and he's been one of the best scorers in the NBA since the break. He's getting to the line an incredible amount. He's been efficient. There's just running out of the – I feel like I'm saying the same stuff about Shai night after night.
Well, the efficiency is what really has me excited. You know, a lot of times guys can score when there's nobody else around to score, which describes this current Thunder roster. You know, no Dort, no Giddey, no Kenrich Williams, no Mike Muscala. You can argue that four of their five best players have not been playing.
Yeah, they're missing eight of their 17 players.
Well, and here's the deal. The other night, what night would that have been? Wednesday night against the T-Wolves. He goes 2 of 15. Take that away. Here's his shooting since the All-Star break. 13 of 22, 13 of 24, 12 of 16, 10 of 23, 14 of 21, 11 of 23, 11 of 18, 9 of 20. And then tonight was 11 of 17?
12 of 20.
No, 12 of 20. 12 of 20. That's outstanding.
All of those you read off are, I think, all but two he shot better than 50% from the field.
Yeah, exactly. And the two he didn't, he's in the 400s.
Yeah.
So now his three-point shooting is still not fantastic, although it's not bad since the All-Star break. since the All-Star, and, well, I got it, I think, right here, through the magic of clicking. Since the All-Star break, he's shooting 35% from deep, which is, you know, good for him because he hadn't been shooting well this season. But the key is he's not shooting as much from three. He's not shot more than five trays in this post All-Star break situation. Before that, he had 21 times in ever how many games he's played, 52 games. He's shot at more than 5 3-pointers. So he's whittled down the 3-pointers, which is what needed to happen. And he's going to the basket more, and he's fantastic around the basket. He's just superb. So all the talk about Baisley or Krejci or Wiggins or Poku or any of the development of these other guys, all that is sort of just details compared to what Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is doing.
Yeah.
And you know, he hadn't played as well. The truth of the matter is, before the All-Star break, he hadn't played as well. Since the All-Star break, he looks like the new and improved SGA that the Thunder hoped for here in year 3 in Oklahoma City, year 4 in the NBA.
Are you worried at all that that version has emerged with all but one game without Josh Giddey?
Not worried. I'm curious.
Yeah, worried's the wrong word. I guess, is it a coincidence or is there something to it?
I don't know. It's a great question. I don't know. I guess if I really wanted to study it, maybe I'll do that tomorrow morning. Go look at the games in which Giddey missed before this, and how did SGA play in those games? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think they can, whatever. If it is not a coincidence, and there is some effect of Giddey's presence negatively affecting SGA, I think it's something they can work out.
Yeah.
Because here's the deal. This SGA is a fantastic version of SGA. And, you know, the idea right before the All-Star break, before, SGA gets that, he had that sprained ankle, and then Giddey gets hurt. But Mark Daigneault tells us, you know, that you're going to see Giddey on the ball more often. Well, if it's this SGA, the answer might be you're not going to see Giddey on the ball more often. If this is the SGA we're looking at, so, you know, you can make – Giddey's a phenomenal passer. You can make good passes even if you're not the point guard or have the ball all the time. So I think this SGA has to make the Thunder reassess – exactly how they want to use those guys together.
Yeah. I thought it was funny how you said, like, when we're talking about Krejci or Poku or Olivier Saar, Lindy Waters, like, you know, it really is. It's cool to talk about, and it's fun to watch guys develop and fun to guess on, you know, who's going to make it in the league, who's going to be here. But it really does just – it's so much simpler than that. It's like, how good does SGA become? How good does Giddey become? Who does the Thunder, where do they draft in this upcoming draft? Like, it really, there are fewer factors than all of these we're talking about. Like, whatever Krejci did tonight just might not mean anything in the grand scheme of things when you think about it.
Yeah, well, it's, most of those guys we were talking about, what we really mean is, can they be the 10th man?
Yeah, and it gives us something to talk about again tonight, you know, as we're talking about this Thunder Hornets game. But Barry, just to wrap up, Shai, he threw an alley oop to Baisley tonight. Shai jumps up basically as the ball's in midair, looks like he's having a good time. And, you know, for all the people worried, oh, like, how is Shai going to feel about the rebuild, or they've got to start building around Shai, or he's going to be unhappy. I don't know Shea personally. I don't know how he feels personally, but just from an outward perspective, that certainly hasn't been the case. And I think that worry has sort of been overblown. He talked about tonight how much fun he's having. Well, you know, whatever. But how do you see it? Do you think it's a concern? I mean, I look today, they've lost 10 straight home games. They have one home win in the year 2022, which is kind of crazy. And just a strange note, they're 1-10 at home against Eastern Conference teams. So the losses have certainly piled up. A lot of it has coincided with the injuries, but the whole morale question, how do you see that?
Yeah, it actually was a little bit of a concern to me when we went through the first, half of the Thunder season. But in the last, month or two, and specifically since the All-Star break, I've not seen much frustration out of SGA. Of course, he's playing a lot better. That's part of it. But I think he's sort of come to the acceptance part of this is where he's at and this is what it is. I think the Laker situation probably, and maybe the Nets also, maybe he's sort of sobered everybody up and said, hey, you know what, this is, even the teams that are considered the loaded superstar teams, even they struggle. I think maybe some guys in the league have said, let's just have fun and play basketball. And I think SGA's that way here the last 10 or 12 games.
Yeah.
So, and of course, I'm just speculating. I don't know either. But I have noticed in the last ever how long a different countenance on the court.
Yeah.
I thought there was some frustration early in the year. He was clanging so many, threes off the rim.
Yeah, taking hard shots.
Yeah, lots of them, excessive three-pointers. He's not doing that much. He seems to just want to live around the basket or driving to the basket. So it's a better Gilgeous Alexander. He's responded very well to the leadership mantle, it seems to me, with Giddey and Dort and Muscala and Kenrich all out. It seems like he sort of said, they need me more than ever. I'm gonna keep my head up. So I'm encouraged by just about everything about Shea Gilgeous Alexander in this down the stretch of the season.
Yeah. This will be totally outdated by the time anyone is listening, but you mentioned the Lakers, so I have to mention that they're currently down at home 85-57 to the Toronto Raptors.
It's possible they won't win that game.
it certainly is possible. Oh, goodness. We'll save more Lakers analysis for another day. But thank you all so much for listening to the Thunder Buddies podcast, and we'll talk to you next time.